Hello, all you positive heads out there. It's so good to be back with all you beautiful reflections of the one source consciousness that creates and animates all things. If you're new to this podcast, of course, we are super happy to have you here, and we just ask that you bring an open mind and heart to your listening experience and to be prepared to explore vantage points that I'm convinced will help shift or solidify your current understanding of the ultimate nature of reality. While listening, you'll be exposed to inspiring, empowering, and unifying perspectives that I'm highly confident will yield stellar results in your life if you opt to try them on for size. Also, at optimistic.tv, we have officially begun releasing the first few episodes of our new late-night style, consciousness-elevating video variety talk show, Optimistic, which features live visionary art, soul share interviews, retreat guests here at the Mystic Manor, as well as live musical performances. I'm also super excited to announce that we are currently making plans to release the rest of season one on my personal favorite online streaming service. So stay tuned to optimistic.tv to follow the unfolding development of this exciting Optimistic expansion, as we'll be posting more info and release dates there soon. And in the meantime, be sure to check out, of course, the first few episodes at optimistic.tv as well. All right, all you positive heads, on this week's Soul Share episode, I'm very excited to have Dr. Nicole LaPera here with me on the show. Nicole is a holistic psychologist who has garnered millions of followers on social media by sharing her powerful perspectives on taking a whole person approach when treating mental illness by focusing on the underlying physical and emotional causes. She's also using her voice to help share these much needed perspectives with other practitioners around the world. Super excited to have you here, Nicole. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you so much, Brandon, for having a chat with me and connecting me with your community.
Yeah, my pleasure. This is a subject that really is something that's near and dear to me and my family. I mean, you know, my mother has had 2 out of 4 total siblings for my grandmother, you know, have different mental impairment. And, you know, there's some autism with my, you know, Asperger syndrome with my nephew. And, you know, my partner works with people who are, have had strokes and these sorts of things, helping them, you know, the speech pathologist. And so it's something that's just always been around, and it's such an important, you know, even my child's mother, I'm thinking of all the things, you know, has dealt with like so crazy amount of mental illness, where after 10 years of being like, she's completely gone, she's kind of having this like come back to reality. And so it's just been around my whole life. And it's something that I think, you know, sort of like many things, stigmatized and sort of like, oh, okay, people are crazy, they're over there going with my life and pushing them away. And, you know, even like I love, I'm sure you've seen it before, the shamanic perspective on, you know, mental illness. And it's oftentimes people that are having a, you know, some sort of a spiritual awakening. I think with my son's mother in particular, it's definitely like tied to that sort of energy. And so, yeah, I think anyone who's focused in this direction with their life path, it's like, are truly angels. So thank you for being you and doing what you do. And I'm going to start with my very predictable starting question. And it is this: you're in an elevator. The woman next to you looks over, says, "What's your passion?" You've got 10 floors to answer. What do you say?
Empowerment is my passion. And I say that because, like you, mental, you know, illness, quote unquote, wellness, was a very big part of my own life too, as on my personal side of things. Similarly, growing up, people around me, you know, struggling in many ways, myself struggling in many ways, and really feeling that intuitive pull to understand the mind, you know, in the role of a helper and to be a psychologist. So very near and dear to my heart. And the reason I so quickly used the word empowerment as my self-proclaimed passion now, because I didn't identify with that word growing up for many reasons. There was many ways I was living that I now understand were very disempowered, were very reactive to the things happening around me. And it was through my own, you know, like similar to what you're kind of conceptualizing, this spiritual awakening. It was my own dark night of the soul, living out of alignment, and then healing journey back into alignment and authenticity that really shifted that belief from disempowerment to empowerment. And now that has become, you know, my purpose on this planet through sharing these tools and these awarenesses on Instagram. And what I hope is inspiring people to begin that bridge back to who they are, because I truly believe that who we all are as humans is an empowered being. And I think a lot of people like myself don't resonate with that word, that empowerment, that experience of it, because I think a lot of us are living very reactively. We are living under conditioned ways of being that just no longer serve us, especially as many of us age into adulthood and beyond.
Yeah. It's, you know, what I love seeing about getting to sort of the root of this is people like yourself who are now, it really is shocking, isn't it, to look at our, you know, established medical system and how much we've focused on, you know, the effect as opposed to treating the effect as opposed to the cause, right? And how it's just even being considered like, we need to look at trauma and how this actually affects people and not just like, here's a medicine to sort of mask what's happening. So I'd love to hear you. Well, maybe before we go too deep down the rabbit hole, I don't want to get ahead of myself. I always like to get a little bit of backstory as well from whoever I'm talking to, just to give the listeners perspective. You alluded to it a little bit that you had your own sort of struggles with this, but anything more that you kind of care to share about your backstory that's led you, you know, down this unique path, we'd love to hear about.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I say, you know, I had my struggles, they for me existed as long as I can remember. I just, you know, awareness of anxiety all throughout my childhood, you know, fearful of the strangers at my door, the next health calamity. It was always, you know, I was worried. And I remember this from as long as I can remember, like I said, a very, very, very young girl. And looking around, you know, my one of my family mantras, or I so lovingly, you know, I've found it to be, we have a saying in my family, and it really embodies a lot of the conditioning that I was living. And that saying is always something. And always something, meaning always something happening. And typically the something that was happening in my household growing up was something stressful. And when I say always, it really did generalize. And it could have been the mail didn't come at the exact time, or you know, there was a delay in a package, or, I mean, I'm illustrating this and it might sound silly, but I think a lot of us that are living, you know, with that kind of stress roller coaster of stress experience, you can resonate. And that's very much what was emblematic of my childhood. So as we all do, I believe that as humans, and this is what I mean when I say holistic, I believe that there are three parts, for lack of a better word, or entities that constitute the human. And those three parts are our physical body and all of its needs, our emotional body and all of its needs, the hormones, the neurotransmitters, the energy that are associated with what we commonly refer to as our emotions or our feelings. And then I believe we have another, that more indefinable component, which is our spiritual being, the unique entity that makes us us. Mm-hmm. And as far as I see it, we all have those three main categories of needs. And when we come to this earth place, however it is that you think we get here, we are in a state of dependency, meaning we are one of the, I think maybe the only animals that cannot meet our needs alone. So we then, some listeners might have heard humans refer to as an interpersonal species or wired to connect. Really what that means is we really gravitate toward relationship, because logically we need them when we first come into this world. Right. Why do I bring this up? Because what I came to realize, or what I know, is we are in a full state of learning when we arrive here, and we are so impacted by everything that's happening around us, by our family units, right? As we extend out to our cultures, our neighborhoods, our religion institutions, society at large, and we are impacted. And we are learning essentially how to be. We're learning how to meet physical needs, right? Emotional needs, and how to kind of spiritually express ourselves. However, the learning that most of us are doing at that early time isn't maybe serving us as well. So what I came to realize about my own personal experience, what did I learn if I go back and I kind of understand my childhood? I learned habits, ways of being, ways to care for my physical body. What I realized that I learned is I didn't really learn how to connect with my physical body because I came to realize my caregivers, my family around me, are quite disconnected from their physical body and its needs. That might sound crazy because we're all living in a body, right? However,
it's very common.
Not many, but we all have one. Not many of us are actually connected to its signals, right? When it's hungry. We don't actually know when our body is hungry. And many of us eat for many different reasons than hunger, right? Some of us aren't connected with the need for rest and how to allow our body to rest. So I learned, right, that I was not necessarily caring for my body in a way that worked for my physical body. Similarly, emotionally. So I'll use my prime example. The only real emotion that my always something family understood was stress. And we weren't really good at you know, navigating it. We were either stressed out and on edge or waiting for the next thing to be stressed out about. That left a lot of emotions outside of my experience. I didn't know or really have much connection to sadness, to anger, and definitely not positive emotion, joy, ease, lightness, happiness, right? So what I learned from a very young age in terms of emotionally was only a very unsuccessful attempt at managing stress. I didn't really understand, and this might sound crazy coming from a clinical psychologist, I didn't really understand my own emotions, right, and how to navigate them. And then what I realized from my own self spiritually, you know, having a lot of emotional disconnection in my family, because how can we connect? None of us knew how to connect with our own emotions.
Right.
That set up a scenario that a lot of us experience, which is we learn how to embody a role. We learn how to show up in our relationships to maintain connection, to maintain love. And one of the common roles, I took on a role of a performer. I learned how to succeed in the two things that I knew how to succeed with, which were academics and athletics, and I knew how to perform. I learned how to show that I was good enough, right, academically and athletically, and I also learned how to meet other people's needs. I learned how to show up, you know, for my mom and be that performer that she needed to, you know, be proud of me in that moment, or for my sister. So a lot of us begin spiritually to embody roles at that very young age to secure our relationship connections, really. And then what happens, because we're very patterned, Brandon, is we repeat everything that we've learned. And this is why life begins to look very similar to our past. I then realized that I was living those conditioned patterns. I was using the same tools that I was taught at that young age, even though now, I mean, at the time when I really started to enter my dark night of the soul, I was approaching 30. For 30 years, right, I was living these patterns that I was finally coming to realize, because symptoms, like you were talking about earlier very beautifully, we do take the approach of what I call putting band-aids over our symptoms.
Right.
And what started to happen by the time I got to age 30, Brandon, is those band-aids weren't working. And my symptoms came screaming to the surface. My anxiety was through the roof, was almost unmanageable. I started to have some physical symptoms where I started to faint. I started to literally lose consciousness. One time I hit my head so hard, I gave myself a concussion. I've never had that happen to me before. Cognitively, I started to forget words, forget people's names. So physically, it was quite scary. And what I began to realize is that the symptoms that were screaming for my attention now by the time I was in my 30s were always there. And like many of us, I got very good at, you know, distracting, medicating them, putting the band-aid on. So I'm a believer now that the symptoms that are coming from somewhere. That's a holistic need to me as well. Not only marrying those three components of the human, like we talked about, physical, emotional, spiritual, but also really understanding that a lot of the symptoms that we're experiencing, not only physical, the same cyclical thoughts, the same emotions that we get stuck in, the same patterns and relationships, right? A lot of us are stuck in these ways that are the symptom. So what I like to inspire people to do is to begin to understand what's driving it. What is the driving cause? And usually that exploration leads you to an imbalance in one or all of those areas, an imbalance in the way you're physically treating and caring for your body, and or an imbalance in how you're navigating your emotional experiences, if you even have the whole spectrum of them, and or how authentically are you showing up in all aspects of your world, if at all. And typically the answer is we're imbalanced, like I said, in one or more of those areas, and that's what's driving those quote unquote symptoms.
Hmm. Yeah, and I think you touch on an important point, which the word authentic. You know, so many people are living inauthentically or not really, you know, avoiding getting to the root of what's going on. You know, okay, I can put a Band-Aid, like you said, on my symptoms and I can get through it. And I'm okay, that's good enough. And I'm going to, you know, walk around with this limp forever, and that's okay. All as opposed to going and really getting down to the root of why it's happening. And so often, of course, you know, more and more, like I touched on earlier, is trauma, you know, is the root for so many people. And like you said, you know, early in life, I mean, those first, what is it, 6 years are so formative. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times I think people don't even fully realize the impact of what they, you know, were exposed to, and how then they spend the rest of their life trying to sort of either unwind it if they become aware of it, or just coping. And it's not necessary, right? I mean, it's not necessary for us to just continue carrying this trauma around. And there's ways, and I'd love to hear some of your, you know, your ideas on how you help people to first bring awareness and then to begin to deal with some of this stuff.
Absolutely. And I appreciate, Brandon, you using the word trauma, because there's something else I want to highlight that was really a point of confusion for me, that I really incorporate a lot in my work, which is, what is the definition of trauma that we're mm-hmm. using to define it? And I say this because, again, in my clinical training, you know, very many years of it, I learned about this thing called the ACEs scale, the Adverse mm-hmm. Childhood Experiences Scale. And what we came to find when the scale was developed, I think it was in the 90s, which is surprising to even think about, that trauma wasn't even attempted to be defined. However, it was. And when it was defined, I think there's somewhere around 7-10 different factors that you assess yourself on. And then you get what is called an ACEs score. And really simply, what they came to find and continue to find is the higher your ACEs score, the more traumas that you kind of attest that you experience, the more likely it is for you to suffer a whole slew of not only psychological and emotional imbalances, but physical symptoms, etc. Wow. Wonderful. Couldn't agree more, right? So traumatic things mm-hmm. that happen result in all of the consequences. That very much is up the holistic alley, right? My physical body, right? This is confusing to me, because when I saw the scale and I took the test, I didn't score very high. This mm-hmm. having an emotionally unavailable mother, right? Not feeling emotionally connected, not feeling safe in my household, though not necessarily having the big reason, the instance of a physical abuse or sexual abuse that typically, right, makes us feel unsafe, I was left at a loss. And it was more confusing to me because I started to see in people that I, clients, you know, friends that I knew that had those big T traumas, I saw the same symptoms in myself, whether or not they were, you know, relationship patterns that we were living, inner mm-hmm. voices in our head, nervous system dysregulation. And outright, I became to realize, Brandon, I was so dissociated. And dissociation historically, being disconnected, you know, it's kind of a protection mechanism where we right. disconnect from our body, from our emotions, in a sense, to keep us safe. I was doing that. Not only was I doing that, Brandon, I was living in a dissociated way. So I was left really confused. Why am I struggling in these same ways that people who have, you know, what are actually defined as traumas, why am I struggling in the same ways? Am I broken? What's wrong with me? And I came to realize that there are many other pathways to, you know, of traumatic, quote unquote, experiences. And I now define that as spiritual trauma. Mm. I believe that at our core spiritual being, and again, I think all of us humans have, I believe that that entity has three very simple needs: to be seen, to be heard, and to have the space to authentically express, to share itself, to share its feelings, to be as it is. Right. And when that doesn't happen, I think a lot of us carry not only the pain that comes along with that, possibly the abandonment that we feel as a result of it. We also carry all of the conditioned ways we very adaptively learn to deal with it. So bringing back me and my story as the example, not feeling like I had a mother who was able to emotionally connect with me, not having a mother who could help me regulate my nervous system. I felt completely overwhelmed and alone. So I began to dissociate, because that was the only way as an infant, as a toddler, as an adolescent, that I could keep myself safe. I couldn't leave the home. I needed them, right? So I now was living, and that had far-reaching consequences. Not only, it was not surprising I came to realize why I couldn't care for my physical body. I was not connected with it. It was not surprising why I didn't know how to care for my emotions. I only knew stress. I actually couldn't let or embody any other feeling, because my nervous system, I came to realize, was locked in fight or flight. It was no surprise I was imbalanced spiritually, because I was only showing up as the performer or the helper of others that I knew how to be. I was leaving a whole part of my person unexpressed. So when I understood that there are other aspects of our being and adaptations that, again, are formed and very early on, I now understood why I was struggling in the same way. So part of my empowerment, you know, that I'm hoping to spread to people is this awareness, because I know the shame. I know the brokenness that we can feel inside when we are struggling in really, quote unquote, big ways, and we don't, quote unquote, have the big T trauma. So I'm here to explain all of the patterns and the conditioned ways that we're living that are a response to earlier pain.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's such a powerful thing to share and draw attention to, because, so often we think of trauma as like, I wasn't physically abused as a child, or it's like, well, it really, you know, is that worse or being completely ignored? Right. And, you know, it's sort of a lot less dramatic in a certain way. But as you know, to go back to your original point, that we are these highly social beings that, you know, thrive on connection. And if that connection isn't, you know, being felt and you're not being heard, it's devastating. And the truth is we all deserve to be heard. And I think, you know, for me, I think a lot of unpacking this from a perspective standpoint is understanding, like, okay, you know, like, look at your story. It's a great one, because, you know, if you're looking at it from the expanded view, it's like, Nicole had this experience. She went through this stuff so that she could fully understand and appreciate it from an experiential standpoint. And now it empowers you to, you know, teach and help others in a way that someone who hadn't been through your journey, you know, just isn't equipped. It's not the same as, you know, you've been through it to some degree. And so it's, I think that's really important for anyone out there to always come back to. It's like, I went through something really challenging, and how is that now meant to serve me moving forward? Right. And if you can bring that to it, I think it's all the difference between it crippling you forever and starting that healing journey. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And I want to kind of put a pin in that first, or emphasize, let me put it this way, that first step of it. You know, I heard you ask me for the practical, and some of the practical is just acknowledging to ourselves that we've been through something. And I say that, you know, put like kind of pausing on that first step, because that's really hard. And a struggle that I had myself, it's really hard too, especially when you look back a little more, I like to use the word objectively, right? When you just view upon your past, your childhood, maybe your family, just for what it is, not even judging it in any direction, that in and of itself could bring up a defensiveness pain. It's hard to see things as they are or as they were. I know for me, I resisted it. It was very hard for me to objectively say, okay, these are the patterns that my family is living. Because there was a big part of me that felt like I was being mean, being bad, being a bad daughter, mm-hmm. that I'm even thinking in this way. I automatically assumed that, you know, looking at it meant I was judging my very, what I perceived as very well-intentioned parents. Right. You know, some of the truth we're looking at, Brandon, are ourselves, right? There was mm-hmm. a lot of truth I didn't want to swallow, that I believed myself to maybe be doing things that I wasn't turned out doing, or I believed myself to, you know, be energetically one way and really I was another way. So that first step of it, right, which I always kind of urge us to do, don't believe me, don't listen to this podcast and just because I'm saying these things assume that you're living in this way. Go look. I am a big mm-hmm. for empowerment. Going back to your first question, empowerment means empowering each of us as individuals. Don't take what someone else said, or don't take my journey at face value. Go see for yourself. Go observe yourself for the next 3 weeks even, right? And mm-hmm. and watch. And when you do that, that's why I said let's pause on that first step. That's hard. A lot of feelings can start to come up as we begin to pull ourselves into a new focus. And then, yes, we can extend those of us who came to realize that, you know, we were suffering, you know, the accumulated effects of these early childhood experiences, you know, giving ourselves the compassion and then extending that and, you know, kind of acknowledging if you can offer the reframe that these experiences might allow growth, not only for yourself, but others. And that's a yep. wonderful reframe.
Yeah. Yeah. I fully feel that reframing these challenging scenarios to see, okay, you know, why is this happening for me? Why did this happen for me? Where's the gift on the other side of it is, you know, a very powerful step towards healing. And, you know, one of the things, too, is telling, you know, there's been so many stories that have been told that sort of disempower us, such as, you know, mental illness is like, you know, I think I saw where you put it as like this genetic chip. Right. And meanwhile, we know with epigenetics, we turn genes, you know, now we realize it's, you know, we heard it. All of us heard it as kids. Oh, it's in your genes that you're this, that, or the other. And it's like, well, hold on. These genes can be turned on, you know, on and off based off of, you know, various mm-hmm. factors. And like, you know, Dr. Bruce Lipton, who wrote The Biology of Belief, talks all about this. I'm sure you're familiar. And so, you know, I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about the genetic aspect of this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, Brandon, so I met the science of epigenetics, honestly, when I was, when I started to have those physical symptoms that I was describing, when I started to faint, forget words, I got scared, if I'm perfectly honest. I, you know, imagined something was going on in my brain and I needed to find out what the hell it was and quick. So I went online, as many of us do, to kind of diagnose and come up with like what I was going to do. Because at this point, I wasn't conceptualizing it in the way that I am now. I didn't really necessarily see what was happening to me or understand it as something to be explored, as something to understand, right? Coming from this imbalanced place, I thought there must be something physically wrong and I'm scared. And for me, coming from all of that health anxiety, so part of my always something in my family, I should mention, were that my mother was very chronically ill and my older sister, who was 15 years older than me, was also chronically ill. So we had very active, you know, medical crises, all sorts of range of them growing up. So for me now, entering my 30s with these physical symptoms, it was right in alignment with what I imagined was going to happen, right? Because all my family had physical ailments. What was stopping me? So anyway, all that to say, I didn't learn about epigenetics in my training. I didn't hear about epigenetics. We were very much trained in the genetic deterministic model, meaning if you have the gene, you get the thing. And if you don't have the gene, you don't get the thing. And it took that discovery, quite honestly, of epigenetics is what inspired me to engage in a healing journey. Because but prior to that, I didn't see a doorway open, a possibility of healing. I thought I was, you know, determined to get those things because genetically I had the chip. And when I dove into research and when I discovered that there was a new science that, you know, is emerging and is very real and valid and, you know, gave us a bit of control back, that honestly was the pivot point. That's what even inspired me then to begin to look into what sort of, you know, I call them like life, what things can I change? What ways can I, what new habits can I create that could possibly bring me back into alignment? So for me, that was the real switchboard. And that's why, again, I'm so impassioned about getting these messages out there, because if you do believe, as I once did, that we're controlled solely by our genetics, then of course you feel powerless and disempowered, like I was talking about earlier, and reactive, because you don't have control. Your genes are given to you at birth, and that's it.
Yep. Before we continue on with today's episode, I'd like to take a quick moment to tell you about our sponsor, Curable. Curable is an app that takes a different approach to helping people manage and alleviate their chronic pain. I know it's been hard to watch my own father, who I've always viewed as indestructible, become increasingly limited in his movements due to chronic knee pain and having to deal with the frustration of not knowing how to treat it effectively. Fortunately, modern neuroscience is illuminating more and more how chronic pain develops and worsens. Studies show that the brain and central nervous system play a much more significant role in chronic pain than we once thought, and by retraining the brain to process pain differently, we can reduce symptoms and gain more control. So, if you're struggling with chronic pain, the Curable app can help you get your life back by guiding you through science-backed techniques designed to help you overcome fear of movement, symptoms, and never getting better. It also offers strategies that can help retrain your brain's response to pain and, in many cases, reduce the intensity and frequency of symptoms. Curable offers both a free and paid version of the app. If you use our link to sign up and get started with the free version, you'll get 50% off if you ever decide to upgrade to a subscription. Just go to getcurable.com/positivehead to set up your free account. That's spelled GETCURABLE.com/positivehead. Yeah, that's a huge realization that, you know, once you start to understand, that's why I love the biology of belief so much in this, you know, epigenetics is such a great example of tying science and spirituality together. You know, when you realize, oh, my, you know, what I'm thinking, what I'm giving energy to is actually changing which genes turn on and off. It's super empowering to see how the physical body is affected by, you know, thought forms, essentially, and you know, taking, oh, if I am spending time doing yoga or working out, I'm actually changing which genes activate. And it's just like, it puts all the power in your hands, right? To start on your path to recovery and self-healing. And I think at the end of the day, it's all sort of, you know, people certainly create the space to heal, help others heal. But in the end, it's all, you know, you have to do the work. And I know, you know, on your I was checking out your Instagram account, which, you know, I think, some of the things that are seeing, first off, longtime listeners know I love like memes and the power of sharing these bursts of information and inspiration on online and on social media, and you have so much good stuff there. I was just like, I was taking a look before we started recording, I'm like, oh wow, there's so many things, so many rabbit holes to go down. And one, you know, so I think it would be helpful to the listeners to maybe I picked out a few that, you know, I'd love to hear you speak on. One is just what I was touching on is how did you, you know, what are some of the tools that you recommend for people to start on this healing, you know, self journey, healing anxiety? You know, what is your quick, you know, obviously you can't go deep too deep in the podcast. We have a limited amount of time, but what is your sort of high level, you know, how'd you heal your anxiety and what are some of the key things that you would recommend for others to begin that journey?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing you're always, Brandon, going to hear me talk about when we are talking about creating change, I'm using that word very intentionally, is creating a new habit of living consciously. The reality is most of us in adulthood by now, I don't know the exact percentage, but it's somewhere upwards of 90% of our day, we're living in what we lovingly term autopilot, which the computer analogy is kind of like that set of programs that determine everything from our daily habits, right? The things we just do day in and day out. Another area we're very habitual is in our thoughts. We tend to narrate life in a very consistent way. We tell ourselves stories about who we are, who others are, our relationships, our past, our future. The list really goes on endlessly. And a lot of us tend to recycle feelings. So back to my always something family, our two major feelings were super stressed out and somewhat stressed out, right? Again, there was not really any other range. I kind of always found myself in those two feelings. So to create change, this is why life begins to look very Groundhog Day for most of us, because we are running those programs day in and day out. So the first step of creating change is breaking that habit, is beginning to first observe upon, don't take my word for it, go see how much you're on autopilot, go see how patterned you are. This might be surprising. A lot of us think we're living in a different way than we actually are. We think we're thinking different things than we actually are. Some of us might not even be aware, Brandon, that we are having thoughts all day long, right? We become so merged with that voice in our head that we don't really understand that that's separate from us, that we are the listener or the viewer of those thoughts.
Right.
So the first step is go and observe and identify and see how much of your day you're spending in that autopilot. So I spent some time at the beginning of my journey really coming to the stark realization of how patterned I was and how surprising some of those patterns were. So then my next big task, and I believe this is the foundational task, is change comes when we have choice. And when we're in that autopilot, our choices are made for us. That's why, again, we live and feel very reactive, because that thing happens in the environment and I do the same thing I do every time that thing happens in the environment, right? Or I mean to do a new morning routine tomorrow, but I've never done this before. So chances are my morning tomorrow looks like every other morning. You get the picture. So now we need to create choice by learning how to be conscious. If you're someone like myself, again, that's dissociated, that's not connected, I call it my spaceship. That's where I've lived a large majority of my life, out in space, not grounded in myself. So the big part of my work initially, Brandon, was creating a consistent daily habit of how to be conscious. And I actually developed a particular journaling technique that I call future self journaling right when I began my own journey of healing as a tool, because I was not someone who resonated with typical, I think, what we think of when we think of journaling, right? Where I get my feelings out, your diary, that type of thing. I never journaled in that way. But I realized how to harness a daily practice, right, of using, setting a daily intention to change, of speaking as if that change in my journal, of writing as if that change is already the case. That's harnessing mental rehearsal. The fact that our brain doesn't know. If I'm telling myself that I'm peaceful and calm and present and conscious, right, it's as if I am in that moment.
Right.
So now I'm beginning to harness and change the way my neurons in my brain are firing. So I harness that tool, and I still journal each and every day. My the area I'm working to change has evolved over time, but I spent a large part of my beginning stages of my journey creating consciousness. Every day journaling with that intention, I created checkpoints throughout my day where I would tune in. I would first notice where my attention was. Typically, I was lost in thought. I was worrying about some future scenario. And then I began to practice moving my attention from our thinking mind, where a lot of our attention spends during the day, to my physical body. I learned how to use my senses how to tune into what I'm actually physically touching, seeing, smelling, tasting in any given moment to begin to create that consciousness. So that creates the foundation then to change or to rebalance any of those areas that we find that are imbalanced. For me, from that stress-based family that I developed in, I realized I was living in an overactive nervous system all of the time. That's why it did feel like always something. That's why it did feel like little things were so big, because my nervous system was always in fight or flight mode. That's why I felt hypervigilant all the time. That's why I felt so much tension in my body all the time. Like I said, that's why small things, I'd be screaming and yelling as if it was the biggest thing in the world, because it was. So a big part of my foundation building in terms of my body was learning how to regulate my nervous system. For me, it was through a daily practice of breath work. So as you can see, I started to build that foundation through consciousness and through these daily lifestyle interventions that I could do on my own. I learned how to do a deep belly breathing practice, and I began to do it each and every day. And doing that created, or was beginning to balance, right, the underlying physical nervous system dysregulations that were causing a lot of my symptoms. So I was building essentially a new foundation from my body up.
Yeah, wow. You know, what I love about this is, like, you know, breath work is a great example of this powerful and incredibly simple practice that, you know, ties us to it literally is, you know, we've heard it our whole life and really didn't realize even how powerful it was. Like, okay, deep breaths. If you're, you know, if you're feeling stressed out or whatever, it's like breath work is really taking that to a whole nother level, like really like intentionally doing deep breaths. And of course there's different modalities and what have you, but all leading to the same thing. I mean, how many people I know now, it's like, oh my gosh, breathwork has changed my life, you know, and this is something, it's not, you're not needing to take any particular medicine. You're not, it's like connecting to your, you know, your spirit in a sense. Like if prana is coming through the breath, energy is coming through the breath, and you're taking in and focused on taking in large, you know, amounts of it. And it's like free energy in a sense. It's like this balancing thing that most people don't realize they've gone through their whole life, and they're breathing shallow. They're hardly, you know, they're hardly getting any of the oxygen that they really need. And there's, meanwhile, it's everywhere. It's the most free, abundant thing on the planet, at least for now. And so And yet we're not, you know, it represents infinite abundance all around us. And we have, you know, not been really utilizing it. And,
I think a big part of it too, Brandon, is we tend to use it only on an as needed basis. I think that's another part of it. I've heard a lot of people not feel successful with breath work because they wait until they're really emotionally activated. And one of two things happen. They either don't remember that they learned this new practice that maybe could be helpful, and or if they do, they're so dysregulated by that time that they don't set themselves up to succeed. So when we talk about epigenetics, unfortunately, I'm always the bearer of this bad news, we really are talking about integrating these changes into our lifestyle. So it's about learning the time in your day where you're doing a little bit of breath work intentionally so that two things happen. You're rebalancing your body overall so that those moments of emotional activation don't feel so out of control, because you're already starting from a more balanced baseline. And when those moments come, you can confidently remember and use your breath to regulate. And I think I see that a lot. So with all of these tools, right? You know, I don't, as far as I think of meditation, you know, if you're only going to meditate, you know, and I don't even think you need a structured meditation practice. You can learn how to be conscious in your day to day. However, if you're only going to meditate, you know, once a week and then go back into autopilot, or shit, if you're only going to meditate in the morning and then you go back into autopilot for the rest of your day, you know, it's your autopilot that's going to win. That's going to be the controller of your patterns in that way. So I say this for all of the tools, unfortunately, you know, as humans, and I'm that human too, I love one and done. I want to take the magic elixir, do it once, flip the light switch, and never have to do the thing again. We're not successful in creating change because it's really hard to create new habits that then evolve into lifestyle.
Yeah, that's an important point is, you know, that and it's with everything, consistency and practice, it has an exponential growth factor. And if, you know, you are now resetting the bar with every day, that's what I like about breath work is as someone who has such an active mind and I'm such a doer, right? Where meditation is like all about, you know, being, and I think my initials are BBB for a reason. It's something I'm really meant to work on in this life. And what I love about breath work is it's sort of like an active meditation in a sense, you know, it gives you that, you know, if you're someone who skews more as like, I like to really be doing things, and meditation therefore is more challenging for me than maybe my friend who's just like zen in everything they do since they were born, you know, it's a really great tool to start, you know, utilizing or playing with. And you know, I guess the good part of what you're saying is, yes, practices in consistency is important. And the great thing is even if you just take, you know, a few minutes and say, okay, I'm going to commit to doing a few minutes every other day and then upping it over time or whatever it is. I think that is, you know, can really, those small steps, because I think sometimes people try and, you know, it's like the January 1st, everyone goes to the gym and they're going to work an hour and a half every day. And by January 15th, they're, you know, they're eating bonbons again because they're like, screw that. And so it's, you know, I think if we can start with a little bit, it can build over time.
I could agree more. I actually talk often, Brandon. I would suggest, let me go a step further. I would suggest you start with only a little bit. I have a concept that I call small daily promise. And I know as humans, especially when we're uncomfortable, maybe we do know five new tools that might help us someday. We do tend to make a to-do list 1 through 5 and start tomorrow, and we just can't maintain it. We have our subconscious, where all of this patterning lives that we've been talking about, is evolutionarily geared to keep us in that which is familiar. So when we do something new, it triggers our subconscious mind. It triggers actually an evolutionary aspect of it. And anything that's unfamiliar, according to our very rudimentary subconscious mind, is translated immediately into possibly threatening, to be avoided. And that's why change is so hard, right? So when we try to change our life from top to bottom, before we know it, that discomfort of the unfamiliar is so strong, we're right back in those familiar ruts, even if logically we know they don't serve us. So I say all that to say, I go as far as to urge, to highly suggest that you do start small, because it is consistency that's important, that you do actually pare down that 1 through 5 to-do list and pick only the first thing and get good and consistent with it. And then you could build upon that foundation, adding more.
Yeah, for sure. Fully agree with that. And, you know, also to speak to your future self journaling, I love that as well. I again, relate to, you know, I've never been one who felt the need to pour all my emotions out into onto paper. Right. And I know for a lot of people, it's hugely therapeutic and it's a huge, powerful tool for them. What appeals to me more is, you know, this idea of sort of, you know, good, you know, they say worry is poor use of imagination. Well, future self journaling, it would be the opposite, right? It's like really good use of imagination. And that's fun. And it feels good. It's like, you know, it's that little kid that's, you know, in class fantasizing about this great, you know, whatever thing, they new toy they want or whatever. And we still nurturing, it's a way to even, I see it as like nurturing that inner child. You know, I always quote I quote a sum total of one Bible verse, and it's, lest you become like a child, you can't enter the kingdom of heaven. So it's like almost like that childlike playing. And when you're you know, sitting there writing down these things that you know, as your future self, like you said, you don't know the difference. Your mind doesn't know the difference, and you're literally swimming in the vibrational pool of that version of yourself, right? It source, the way I view it, is source anything you can think of. It's been there, done that, and gotten the t-shirt. From this moment forward, there's infinite possibilities of what it can be and manifest. And, you know, God, higher self, source, whatever you want to call it, the universe, it can do it all and has done it all in eternity, in which we happen to be floating in. From my perspective, it's like your fifth birthday party is happening on another channel. Your future self is happening on another channel. You're just not tuned into that. So once you are future self journaling, you're actively, you know, connecting with that version of reality, that timeline or what have you, where you're calling it in and creating a connection to it. And not only is it making your tomorrow look brighter by doing this, I believe it's making the now, as you pointed out, you're literally feeling it in the moment when you're, you know, diving into that. It's as if it's happening now. And what a powerful tool that we have, where we can start, you know, rewriting the script. You know, someone who I think is really lost and disconnected and anxiety and all those things. What a great way to say, okay, I'm gonna grab a pen and paper, and I'm going to spend an hour just writing and using my powerful imagination, tapping into my childlike self to create my future self. And, you know, and then see how you feel on the end of that hour, right? The results will speak for themselves.
Yeah. And I just want to send a message out there, because I totally agree. It can be an incredibly imaginative, creative, positive, uplifting experience. And for others, it can be the opposite. I've had many people contact me struggling to even imagine a future self, feeling broken because of it. Imagining, Brandon and I talk about this often when I talk about inner child work, creativity and imagining requires a balanced nervous system. We need to feel safe in the moment before our brain can even enter imagination and creativity. It's a large reason why I thought I was not gifted with that genetic chip. I would have never described myself as a creative being a decade ago. Now I see my daily life as a creative expression. It's because I was so stuck in, you guessed it, fight or flight, stress or not, or a little bit, right? So I say that to, you know, I also want to send a message out there to people that are struggling to imagine a future that's different. And if you can get an imagining up, summon it, to those of you for a very long time aren't going to believe it, whose subconscious is going to roll its eyes at you and say, yeah, but you're not worthy of that. That's nice and all, that's not for you. Because there's a big stage for some of us that we can't believe if we can even summon a future that's different. It takes an incredibly difficult time to believe it. Why? Because what is a belief, in my opinion? A belief is a practiced thought that's reflected in our lived experience. So it's real for us. So when you are feeling less than and your life looks less than, to try to convince yourself that you're worthy of a life that is, you know, from a worthy person, you don't believe it. Because day after day, you've been confirming a different narrative about yourself. And quite honestly, Brandon, your environment reflects it, right? So I just like to send that message, because I know I am one of those humans who felt like I lost my creativity, who if a decade ago you would have asked me to imagine a future, I would have been blank. I would have been able to imagine all the terrible things that could have happened in my future. But I would have not have been able to imagine the positive. And furthermore, once I could imagine it, it didn't resonate. I didn't believe it until I began to create those changes, until they reflected in my life. And then it's really hard not to believe. That's when you can create change.
Yeah. Yeah. I have what a powerful point. And it's probably hard for me to relate to, because I have always felt like, you know, I've been in a state where to imagine creatively is just, you know, it's what I've always known. And so, you know, I think that's really important and powerful to point out that, hey, this could be challenging for some, you know, more challenging for some than others. And you know, one of the things that you said about, you know, thinking I'm not creative, I always sort of laugh to myself when I hear that now, because it's like, I believe we are all the creator and created rolled into one, right? Like, we are one with the source consciousness that creates and animates all things. Keyword being create. So what do? You are a creator. Now, you can put that on the sidelines and forget and disconnect yourself and experience trauma and, you know, not be grounded in your body and, you know, stunted by whatever you've experienced. Yet the acorn of creativity is inherent within you, right? And it's just waiting for the right conditions in order to sprout into the oak tree. And so, you know, that's something that I would offer to anyone who's ever told that story of I'm not a creative being. It's like, you know, you are ultimately beyond creative. You are, you know, we really want to get deep. It's you are the creator of your reality. And so, you know, just starting to even consider some of these ideas, like, you know, and a lot of times it's been sold to us. We're told at 5 years old, oh, you can't sing, or you can't, you're not, that's not for you. And oh, okay. You know, and then you buy what someone is selling you, and, you know, next thing you know, it's now you have the work to get to unwind it. But on the other side of that is really gives the contrast to fully appreciate the creative soul that you actually are.
Yeah, exactly. And sharing from a personal experience. So at the time I started, like I said earlier, playing sports when I was quite young, I also did a bunch of things, including art classes, including dance classes. And at that time, the feedback that I received, I perceived myself as better, to use simple words, at sports and academics. So I stuck with those. So before you knew it, I stopped going to the art classes. I stopped dancing, right? So this is all how this early conditioning, because like I was explaining to everyone earlier, right? The way I connected, the way I felt good enough, was through performing in those two particular ways. So it's interesting. It's like there was this creative self that I was expressing, but because it wasn't getting the feedback that these other two aspects of myself were, I then kind of gravitated away from it. And something else I think is interesting to share, in my virtual healing membership, the Self Healer Circle, we opened enrollment last November for the first time. So we're nearing about a year. Enrollment will probably open up again in November of this year. So last month, each month we cover a topic in healing. And last month, our topic was, you guessed it, creativity. And what is really cool to offer is that, because I find this to be the case, I think a lot of us, when we hear that word, we assume the traditional definition of creatively, writing, dancing, like I said, art, right? And I think what was really helpful was exploring with all of the circle members how creativity is expansive. Creativity for someone could be cooking. Creative could be someone, for someone could be how they wear their clothing, right? Creativity could be the earrings that they choose. I mean, anything. Yep. And that was a big aha for me, and a very big aha in the community. Because I think a lot of times we pigeonhole ourselves. And if you don't have that, you know, drive to do art or to write poems or to do the things, we somehow feel gardening could be creative, right? So totally. I liked the idea of expanding the definition for many of us as well, because I believe I very much am resonating. You know, we are the creators, and our expression, our daily expression, is an act of creativity.
Mm. Yeah, I so relate to that as someone who's sort of walked the, you know, with a foot in both worlds, from, you know, being a serial entrepreneur and, you know, having, you know, 100 plus employees at one point in time. It was like, you know, early, I reflect back on the early years of my company then, and it was like highly creative. You know, it was like constantly coming up with creative solutions to, you know, make things work. And so, you know, even in what a lot of times is considered, you know, the complete opposite of creativity is the business world, there's creativity there. There's creativity, you know, everywhere. And if you're telling the story that you aren't creative, I think it's really time to start looking at, you know, telling a new story, telling one that, you know, that helps to open up your creativity, because that's really, I feel, when we're the most fulfilled is when we're being creative in some way, because we're fractals of source, and source is, that's what it does, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think finding your own way to be creative, and there's an infinite way, you know, infinite ways that can unfold.
Yeah, I think that's just there's such beauty in, and again, like I said, I think a lot of our conditioned patterns have been adaptations from very early moments where, you know, we weren't allowed that expression, where something we talked about a bit earlier, right? This concept of not being seen, you know, sometimes it's we're not ignored fully. For some of us, it's certain emotions, certain aspects of ourselves, right? So I was very seen academically, athletically, you know, was I seen in any other direction? Some of us, we could be very seen or what we can't, you know, when we're expressing sadness, you might have a parent who struggles with sadness. So sadness isn't present in our household, right? So I think it's important to understand that it doesn't have to necessarily be a whole globalized thing, right? We don't have to feel or have been fully neglected. A lot of times, you know, the adaptations that we're living are parts of ourselves, you know, hiding parts of ourselves, only expressing what we've determined is favorable for this one person, or playing the role that we're most comfortable playing. I said, oftentimes it's at some degree of disservice or misalignment with ourselves.
Yeah, I think when you say that, I think it was Eleanor Roosevelt that said, do something every day that makes you uncomfortable. And I think pushing yourself to, you know, a little bit each day is a powerful way to find, I did a little bit each day. And, you know, after a period of time, wow, look, this took me, you know, it took me very, very far, you know, and outside of my confines of my old self, in a sense. So
yeah, I think, you know, discomfort, we have to learn to differentiate the different types of discomfort, like I was saying earlier, understanding that a lot of the discomfort that we feel is when we're doing something unfamiliar. So I start to, in my mind, you know, I whatever I used to say to myself, I feel bad, I feel uncomfortable, I changed it to, I have a catch-all phrase now. I feel different than I normally feel. And that helps me to feel a little less, you know, kind of disparaging of the discomfort of unfamiliarity. This, of course, so making sure I'm clear, this doesn't mean exposing yourself to abuse, you know, taking boundaries down, allowing yourself to be violated. I am of the belief that that spiritual being that we all are, that's connected to source, has an intuition. We have limits. We know when they're close. Yep. We have that sixth sense, right? So again, a lot of us are dysregulated. We're perceiving threat everywhere because we're not in a balanced body, which is why, like you were talking about earlier, we have to build that foundational balance in so we can get a clearer connection to and awareness of our intuition. That doesn't come overnight. I assure listeners that that intuition will alert you when the discomfort is indicative of abuse or a violation.
Right.
And then obviously the goal is to put up a boundary and to keep yourself safe. A lot of the discomfort though that we're living day to day, to speak to, you know, Eleanor Roosevelt's quote, is that this discomfort related to the unfamiliar. So in those instances, right, I have adopted the reframe that I found quite helpful. So anyone, listeners, I'm different than I normally feel. That's just a reminder that I want that familiar. I want that stress. Yeah. On some level, that stress is familiar to me. So feeling peace, feeling, you know, balance, even though I desperately would have proclaimed that's all I wanted in life, leave me alone, I want a peaceful moment, it was uncomfortable. Yeah. And when I started to just label it for it's just different than you normally feel, Nicole, it allowed me to tolerate it a bit more and understand that it's not discomfort that I'm moving in the wrong direction. It's actually discomfort that I'm moving in the unfamiliar.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of times it's you're being stretched to be able to hold more, you know, and it's like any growth. It's not comfortable for the caterpillar as it melts into a goo and becomes a butterfly. Right. So I think, and drawing that line between, like you said, it doesn't mean you subject yourself to abuse and, you know, it's really learning how to follow your gut and intuition there, you know, and understanding the difference. Right. So I'd like to change, to kind of take it in a little different direction for as we wind down here. As listeners know, I love to hear stories of synchronicity or serendipity or positive paranormal stories. Anything fun up your sleeve to share that comes to mind?
Yeah, absolutely. So interestingly enough, I can tell you two quickies because they really are emblematic of my journey and my path. So several years ago, I had my individual practice in Philadelphia, the Mindful Healing Center, and I was seeing individual clients, and it was quite successful. So long story short, I had the idea that I wanted to expand into a group type of practice. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I vetted some people. I had some, you know, arrangements set up for therapists to come in. And seemingly one after one had crazy things happen in their home, in their family life, loss of job, et cetera, where they were, you know, came back to me and were unable to, you know, sign on for the day of the week that they thought. Anyway, so long story short of it was, I believe that at those moments after multiple had happened, and there were really uncanny things that, and whether or not they were true or not, who knows? That's not the point of the story. The point of the story is I was like, huh, that's very interesting, Nicole. Why, you know, are all these really crazy things happening as you're trying to, you know, set up this group practice with other humans? And at the time, understanding and, you know, beginning to recreate a connection with the universe and, you know, look at the things that are happening and try to understand whether or not, you know, that there was a sign in there. So the short of it is that was a moment where I looked at it and I put a big pause on, you know, hiring the people, on starting the in-person practice. And I can't tell you within a couple months, maybe within the month, I had my first fainting attack. And
your
what I understand
what?
Now, my first faint, I fainted for the first time ever.
Oh, right. Gotcha.
So my symptoms were already percolating, and now they come to the blazing forefront. Obviously, retrospectively, I was happy on one account that I didn't have a practice to manage as I was trying to heal. And the short of it was, I now understand that serendipitously as the universe saying, hold on, you know, you're not ready for this step. That's not the direction. That was when I was still working in the old model, et cetera. So that allowed me to, those uncanny, you know, whether or not they were true, allowed me to push pause enough and I listened enough that then what evolved was my dark night, my healing. And now, of course, I'm working holistically in a much different way. I'm working virtually in a much different way. So I think if I didn't listen to those signs that were coming up, I might not have been on this path. And then wrapping this all full circle, which is really a cool serendipitous experience, I came across the concept of mindfulness, of the practice of mindfulness when I was, I want to say 22 or 23. It was one of my first semesters at the new school in New York City, and I was walking to class and I saw a quote, and now I have to get the quote so that I'm saying it right. I saw a quote on a museum, hanging out front of a museum. And it said something along the lines of, life is meant to be lived in moments. And it was by, I think, a poet, Cesare, I'm going to say his name completely wrong. And I loved quotes. And I Googled the quote. And I loved quotes. And I was always very into it. So I wrote the quote down, you know, like on my hand. And when I got to class, I didn't have smartphones like I do now. I got home, actually, if I'm honest, at my day job the next day, I Googled the quote and I was like, oh, you know, and that exploration took me, the concept of moment somehow connected to mindfulness. And now I want to remind everyone, when I was 22, mindfulness was not talked about like it is now. It isn't on, you know, on the Times front page or is it? So this was news to me. And at that point in time, I knew that there was something really important about this concept of mindfulness, and I knew it was going to play a role in my journey. Anyway, so fast forward in time, I dabbled with mindfulness. I, like you, very much difficult to stop, to sit still. It took me until I was well into my 30s and healing to really begin to integrate consciousness. I'm writing a book. And I was speaking with my co-writer, and she was helping, like I was sharing my story about life, blah, blah, blah. And I get to this point of the story, and she's like, this is recent now. Now I'm living in Venice, right? I'm living this new future self. I'm in a much more balanced body. I mean, I'm practicing living consciousness. I'm teaching it. So she asks me, as part of my narrative that's going to be throughout the book, you know, oh, well, what was that quote? That would be cool to put it in.
Yeah.
And I said, it's some version of living in moments. Quite honestly, I don't even know the exact quote. And she's like, okay, well, if you can find it, you know, it might be an interesting thing to put in the book. So I said, okay. And I kind of log it and I kind of don't. Within days now. So now I'm in New York. I mean, I'm out here. I'm in Venice. I'm living mindfully. I don't have that practice that the universe told me not to get. I think it might have been within days. I was tired all day. My partner and I just and I were going to order pizza for dinner. We mm-hmm. order pizza. We're new to Venice. We pick a random place. It has good reviews on Yelp. Sure, we'll eat there. The pizza box comes random. On uh-huh. the side of the pizza box, I'm getting chills thinking of this. I don't know, a pizza place decided to put quotes on their pizza box. Granted, it was the
only in Venice.
Yeah, only in Venice. I mean, you would understand that. The quote is delivered to my front door.
Wow.
And to me, I share both of those stories. I'm getting
chills
of it.
Love
I see all of this as the universe. Divine guidance, right? Telling mm-hmm. me, no, Nicole, this isn't the work you're meant to do. You know, something's going to happen and my higher self listens. And then the confirmatory, I'm in Venice, I'm living this new self. I mean, Jesus, I'm writing a book that I would never have imagined was going to be an opportunity allotted to me. And then to my door comes that concept that I knew was something.
Wow. On the answer, the moral of the story, folks, the answer can always come in the form of pizza.
And I agree with that on a personal level too.
Me too. and if when I ask you my final question about the meaning of life, that you can incorporate it. And before we do that, before we wind down with my cliche final question, what's the best way for people to connect and continue to follow your work? Get your book, all that jazz.
Absolutely. The most in real time way to follow along with my own healing journey, because I'm still healing too, and all of the self healers community, is through the Instagram at the.holistic.psychologist. Anyone who's interested in that future self journal template in the link tree, you will see the direction to sign up for my email list, and then that will get deposited right in your inbox. Others of you who might be interested in the self healing, the self healer circle. Enrollment will open, like I said, November/December 1st. It's all pending a new website we're having built for it. So really exciting stuff happening in the community, and all information really does go through that Instagram. I have a YouTube channel as well for those that are more visual. I do some teaching videos, also the Holistic Psychologist. But those on Instagram, I'm always shouting out that as kind of the home base hub, because all information, all new projects that I'm doing really are communicated through there.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Well, this has been incredible. Nicole, I so appreciate you taking the time to connect and share your wisdom. And I definitely get it why you are, so many people are drawn to you and your energy and your work. Such powerful, powerful perspectives that you're sharing. And I appreciate you taking the time. I do have one final question. It is this, in 60 seconds or less, what is the meaning of life according to Nicole LaPera?
I'm going to go ahead and recycle that first concept. I think it's so important. It's empowerment. It's expression. You know, empowering ourselves to be the fullest expression of ourselves, of that uniqueness that is inherent in each of us. I think that's the journey. And I think we start, interestingly enough, in that pure state of us, and life happens and we become disconnected, and then we spend the remainder of our journey finding our way home.
Yes, indeed. As Ram Dass said, we're all walking each other home, and I've definitely enjoyed this walk with you.
As did I. Brandon, thank you so much for sharing your time, your energy, your community, and giving me this opportunity to connect with y'all.
Absolutely. It has been such a pleasure. And all of you out there listening, thank you for tuning in. Your beautiful brainwaves and beautiful hearts. Until next time, journey well. Love you so, so much. And if you're feeling the call to come for a week retreat style mystic manner immersion, remember to go now and book your time to speak with me directly about stepping into the optimistic vortex at calendly.com/talkwithbrandon while there are still spots left. Otherwise, I look forward to co-creating magic with you at the Mystic Manor.